Well, hello there, and welcome to Coast AM. My name is Richard Serrett, and I'm sitting in for George Norrie, the hardest working man in show business. Now, I don't have cosmic security clearance, so I can't say for sure where George is, but I'm speculating here that he's off somewhere making more episodes of Beyond Belief, his internet television program, and that's why I've been pressed into duty. All I know is I usually receive a series of clues encrypted inside the New York Times crossword puzzle telling me to be here, or sometimes I receive a late-night phone call. It usually goes something like this. The phone rings, and then it's Richard Serrett. Why don't you pass the time with a game of solitaire? And then again, mysteriously, I just find myself here in front of this microphone. So here we are, you and me, live from Los Angeles, via Coast to Coast's Toronto affiliate, AM 640 Talk Radio, and I can't think of a better way of spending my Friday night, Saturday morning, than with you all. And of course, Friday nights mean that in the second half of the program, it's open lines. It's an institution, a national treasure, and it's all about you. It's your time to shine. It's really, when you think about it, it's democracy at its best. You call in, you get on the air, you exercise your First Amendment, and you steer this ship wherever you want to take it. And I'm here. I'm all ears. First, however, we will travel to the red planet, Mars. About a week and a half ago, a plasma physicist, what is that? We'll find out. Anyway, he presented a controversial theory at the 46th Lunar and Planetary Science Conference in Houston, Texas. Dr. John Brandenburg says the evidence is incontrovertible. An ancient Mars civilization was wiped out by a nuclear bomb. Now, at the conference, he didn't go into a lot of detail about the alien races, per se. He pointed to a number of artifacts on the surface that he says are remnants of an intelligent society. But here's where it gets interesting. He warned, we should all be fearful of an attack from this supposedly hostile alien race that wiped out these same Martians. He went on to explain that a thin layer of radioactive substances, including uranium, thorium, and radioactive potassium, on the surface of the red planet provide evidence for his theory. And nuclear isotopes in the atmosphere apparently resemble hydrogen bomb tests, which he says occurred in two places on Mars, Sidonia Mensa and Galaxias Chaos. He says, we have now found evidence of the nuclear melt glass trinitite formed on Earth at the site of nuclear weapon airbursts. They were found at both sides of the hypothesized explosions, and all this was presented at the aforementioned conference. Now, as I was reading about this in the online edition of the London Daily Mail, I thought, wait a minute, I've heard much of this before. Ancient advanced civilizations on Mars, ancient cataclysmic events. Any casual listener to Coast will be familiar with my guest in hours one and two tonight. He's been talking about this for years, and on this very program, Richard C. Hoagland is standing by to talk about the Sidonians and Utopians and nuclear war on the red planet. He'll also talk about something much closer to home, our moon, and what the Chinese have discovered there. We will go down the jade rabbit hole here on Coast to Coast AM. I'm Richard Serrett. Come on in, set yourself down, and stay a while. Welcome back to Coast, Richard Serrett, sitting in for George Norrie. Richard C. Hoagland is a former Space Science Museum curator, a former NASA consultant, and during the historic Apollo missions to the moon, was science advisor to Walter Cronkite and CBS News for over 20 years. Richard has been leading an outside scientific team and a critically acclaimed independent analysis of possible intelligently designed artifacts on Mars. Richard and his team's investigations have been quietly extended to include over 30 years of previously hidden data from NASA, Soviet, and Pentagon missions to the moon. Of course, he is the author of The Monuments of Mars, A City on the Edge of Forever, and Dark Mission, The Secret History of NASA. Richard C. Hoagland, welcome to Coast AM. How are you, sir?
Thanks for your nice intro, and nice to be here, Richard.
Well, I'm in awe. I feel like I've sort of grown up with you listening to Coast to Coast over the years.
We can't have any awe tonight. You're Richard.
All right.
I'm Richard.
Just a couple of Richards.
I have a huge story to try to tell in 2 hours.
Well, we will do our best. First of all, explain. Now, have you attended one of these conferences that I spoke of earlier? This is the 46th. The 46th Lunar and Planetary Science Conference in Houston. Tell us a little bit about what this conference is all about.
Well, back during the old, you know, Groven days of Apollo, after Apollo 11, the scientific community that had participated in the missions and had got, you know, several hundred pounds of moon rocks obviously wanted to analyze them and share them with the world. So they set up this, turned out to be annual Lunar and Planetary Science Conference in Houston, next to the NASA Houston Manned Space Flight Center. And the first one was back in, I think, 1970, you know, a few months after Apollo 11 in July of 69. So evermore, every year in March, there is an LPL Lunar and Planetary Science Conference, which is often referred to as the Rock Conference because it dealt primarily initially with moon rocks and then expanded over the years to include papers on outer planets, you know, unmanned robots photographing the rings of Saturn, you know, the distant echoes of the Voyager 2 in entering the or leaving the heliopause and entering interstellar space. It's become a kind of an interesting catch-all for all kinds of cutting-edge stuff. But what was really intriguing is to see Brandenburg show up and give a paper which actually is an echo, fleshed out a bit, of conversations that he and I had back 30-some years ago when I first invited him to join the Mars investigation, the independent Mars investigation at SRI International, which is a big think tank there south of San Francisco. And this was 1983. So John and I initially had conversations because I reached out and specifically picked him out because he was a plasma physicist familiar with nuclear weapons and nuclear weapons technology because in our analysis, our early primitive analysis of the Viking images of Cydonia, the place on Mars about 45 degrees north, which is reflective of some kind of ancient habitation. It's got a huge face, pyramids, geometry, layout, you know, and it has anomalous isotopes as measured by Viking and subsequent missions. And John and I in 83 had this conversation when I was going to invite him in because I wanted him to be our nuclear expert on the team because to me, some of the craters in the Cydonia region around the face and the pyramids did not look like natural meteoritic impact craters or asteroid impacts. They look like the nuclear explosion tests in Nevada, in Sudan, and the other name tests that were done in the southwestern United States. And they have a different size to depth ratio, and they really look different if you have any kind of an eye for this. And that's what John and I began our conversation, which ultimately led him into the independent Mars investigation as a contributor, and ultimately to write a couple, three books about ancient civilizations on Mars, and now to come out with the idea that the civilizations that we've been looking at may have been destroyed by a global Martian nuclear war.
Well, let's talk about the evidence and these nuclear isotopes.
So none of that impresses you?
Well, it does. It does. I mean, I want to delve into that because I want to find out, you know, why. I mean, is there no other natural explanation for that? I want you to explain why this is so significant.
Okay. Well, in science, you're never dealing with absolutes. You're usually dealing with probabilities. You know, something is likely to happen. it might happen. It's incredibly improbable that it will happen. I mean, I heard a statistic yesterday dealing with this awful tragedy in France of the crash of the German Wings airliner. And some expert, and it was repeated several different places, so I know it's got to be good data, the odds of you, if you flew on an airplane, a jet airplane, every single day of your life, the odds of you getting into a fatal accident in an airplane, you'd have to do that day after day, year after year, week, you know, century after century, for 63,000 years to have the chance of one that you would be dying in an airplane. That's how safe air travel is. Well, that's
sure,
a boggling statistic.
It is,
that
indeed.
That statistic is 1 in 25 million. Well, the odds of life on Mars, of an ancient civilization on Mars and on the moon, to leap to the second part of our conversation, and on comets or at comets involving asteroids, little moons of the giant outer planets, even the rings of Saturn, is close to exceeding that 25 million to one odds against having an accident on an airplane that will kill you by a factor of a trillion times.
Wow.
In other words, we have statistical data that is so robust that under any normal circumstance, Richard, the jury, which means the American people and the experts in the academic community, would have looked at all this data coming out of 50 years of going into space and sending back images, and that they would have said, oh my God, we live in a formerly inhabited solar system. Instead, for 50 years, they've been playing hide and seek with the real good stuff, the data. And they've given us the pabulum. Oh, some spectacular pictures and interesting, if somewhat boring to most folks, science. But the really good stuff, which is the stunning verification that the human race on this planet is not alone and is surrounded in orbit by myriad millions of artifacts of every conceivable size and description on all of the worlds we have visited and sent back in all the images by all the different international space programs. And that all of this is supposed to be kept from not only the American people, but everybody. I mean, talk about a crime against humanity. Well, in that very, very depressing and sad 50-year history, there is now a difference. There's a change. There's something going on, and it's going to lead, I believe, to the D word, disclosure. Officials and government finally sitting in front of microphones and saying, well, look at this, folks. Look what we found out there. And the reason I think this is because I have been watching carefully over the last several years a series of drip, drip, drip announcements in a variety of venues, from White House statements to NASA administrator testifying before Congress to images themselves, culminating in a flood of stunning images from NASA, from the European Space Agency, from ESA, from the Chinese Space Agency, which landed, you know, your Jade Rabbit hole on the moon a few months ago.
Yes, yes, we have to get into
that. It's all coming together to where they're getting ready for the big disclosure that, you know, folks, we ain't alone, and we've got stuff to look at, and we're going to need a lot more money to do this as a diversion from the war mania, the war insanity which has overtaken planet Earth. Back during the Kennedy administration, there was a very controversial publication, and the details can be found just by Googling on the internet. It was something called a document which was published first as a story in Newsweek magazine called Report from Iron Mountain. Just Google Report from Iron Mountain. There has been incredible controversy ever since, whether this was a real document or a spoof document, but it mentions all kinds of real think tank players like Brookings and Heritage and the Hudson Foundation, whatever. And what the document purported to explore with a bunch of scholars and military people and economists and eggheads, as they were called back then, from a variety of universities and industry and even government, where they were looking at alternatives to the human race killing itself in the next 100 years, either through environmental disaster or through a thermonuclear global World War III that basically winds up incinerating civilization and we all start over. And the document that came out, this report from Iron Mountain, mentioned an extraordinarily accelerated and expanded and funded civilian space program exploring and colonizing and utilizing the resources of the solar system as something big enough to be a counterweight to the overwhelming human depressive cycle of war after war after war after war on a planet with technology that was shrinking. So some idiot in a basement somewhere in the world can literally create a weapon that can destroy a sizable chunk of humanity because of the trigger effects of everybody overreacting, and you wind up with World War III with nuclear weapons on all sides.
But it seems then that it's history repeating itself.
One last footnote here.
All right.
My suspicions, based on 30 years now of doing this, remember, I used to be Cronkite's science advisor. I was a NASA science advisor. I've got plaques flying out amid the stars that Eric Burgess and I, you know, gave the idea to Carl Sagan decades ago. So when I look at this and I come to the decision that the report from Iron Mountain was not fiction, but in fact a trial balloon by the Kennedy administration, specifically John Kennedy himself and his hand-picked NASA administrator, James Webb, and their crafting of what they referred to as a vision for a 21st century space America. Because they realized at the beginning of the space age, the dawn of the first age of space, that the only thing that ultimately would save the human race is to get off this one little ball of mud and expand out so we have more resources. We're not chopping up the furniture in the living room to support 7 billion people. And we're not going psychologically stir-crazy because we're confined to one little dust bowl where resources are running out and more people will have to have mouths to feed and look to their neighbors with greedy, envious eyes because it's survival or die. So this vision, this report from Iron Mountain, is what I wanted to kind of talk about tonight because I'm going to give in the next hour and a half a bunch of data that supports overwhelmingly now that we are being prepared in the way that will strike love and wonder into the heart of any Star Trek fan. We are being prepared to confront the up till now hidden reality from NASA and all these other space programs that, in fact, there's enormous stuff out there to go and explore, bring home, back engineer, and create the kind of human civilization on this planet that we all finally deserve. And I don't think we're very many months or years away from such an extraordinary change, and that's what I want to talk about tonight.
All right. Well, obviously, there is this incredible battle going on behind scenes between those who want disclosure and those who don't feel we're quite ready yet. But you seem to be suggesting, Richard, that the pro-disclosure forces are winning. I'd like to know, who are these disclosure forces behind the scenes?
Well, hang on. Before we get to the speculation, which is the fun part, let's do some data. The reason that I'm thinking that this is a robust model, this is a political model that's finally, Steve Bassett, are you listening, is going to come to pass, is because the three major space agencies have been putting extraordinary, stunning, awesome data on the public record and yet not commenting. Now, after decades of hiding and hiding and hiding and lying and lying and attacking anybody like me that claimed that, you know, they may be not telling us the total truth, why would NASA, why would ESA, why would the Chinese government quietly be putting real images of stunning ancient artifacts on the moon, on Mars, on Ceres, the new asteroid that we've just walked up on, the largest asteroid in the asteroid belt that has an extraordinary history, if not a future, that we're going to see in the next few weeks, and this comet that the Europeans have been exploring in great depth, 67P, and two Russian names that I will not try to pronounce tonight, all of that is coming to a head at the same time that politically we're seeing more and more avant-garde discussions in mainstream media, like John Brandenburg's appearance at this mainstream conference and being allowed to present the absolutely heretical idea that there was an ancient nuclear war on Mars and there were Martians.
All right, Richard, you stay where you are. We will come back on the other side and delve into this incredible story, a nuclear war on Mars laid waste to an advanced civilization. Do we see history perhaps repeating itself? If we're not careful, perhaps. More of my conversation with Richard C. Hoagland right here on Coast to Coast. Don't you dare go away. Welcome back. Sitting in for the indefatigable one, George Norrie. Richard C. Hoagland standing by. More of our conversation upcoming. Dr. John Brandenburg, a plasma physicist, presented his compelling controversial theory recently at the 46th Lunar and Planetary Science Conference in Houston, Texas. He says nuclear isotopes in the atmosphere around the red planet apparently resemble hydrogen bomb tests, which he says occurred in two places on Mars, Cydonia Mensa and Galaxias Chaos. Now, back in 2011, he first postulated that the red color on Mars could have been due to a naturally occurring thermonuclear explosion. But now he thinks it was caused by an intelligent alien race, an ancient nuclear cataclysm on the red planet. We'll find out what that all means for our future when Coast to Coast continues right here. My name is Richard Serrett. Stay with us. And we are back with Richard C. Hoagland, enterprisemission.com, of course, is the website. Richard, if we could just go back to this Brookings report. Now, this goes back to what, about 1960, which...
Well, commissioned in the late 50s. It was delivered to the 87th Congress in 59. And Kennedy, when he came in, curiously made it public in 1960 and 61.
Right. And there was just this one little short section that's titled The Implications of a Discovery of Extraterrestrial Life. Tell me about that section.
Well, when we found this, I mean, this had been a rumor for years and years and years. And make a long story short, one of my friends asked me to kind of track down to see if this thing was real. And I turned to a friend of mine named Clinton, of all things, in Little Rock, Arkansas, no relation to Bill or Hillary. And my friend found a copy of the Brookings Report, which has a much longer and more formal name, in the Federal Archive in Little Rock, Arkansas. Turns out there's a copy in quite a few federal archives scattered around the country. Now, the reason this report was so incendiary is because it basically had this section, as you just noted, discussing the implications if NASA were to find ET life. You know, little aliens, little green men. But what they said in the document was so provocative because it said that such a discovery would not likely occur for 20 years. How could they know that in 1959? And that it would first come about because of ruins of an ancient civilization discovered either on the moon, Mars, or Venus. And how could they know that?
Indeed.
So what they then recommended, which is a really important, crucial part of the document, is A, there should be deep discussion in the government about the role of scientists in any of this. And that, of course, made every hair on the back of my neck stand up because the role of scientists, when they find out something, is to, damn it, publish. This is veiled government speak for how can we shut the damn scientists up so we can do with this what we want.
And how
then,
did this... Sorry, go ahead.
There's one more section. Then there's a recommendation set of pages that come after that. And by the way, the footnotes are really interesting, drawing on earlier work and discussions with Margaret Mead, who I worked with at the Hayden Planetarium in New York City many years ago, and her work in the South Seas and extrapolations from primitive cultures meeting advanced cultures in Earth history, which has not worked out too well for the so-called primitive culture, eh? Anyway, the paranoia in Brookings basically said, paraphrasing Jack Nicholson in that wonderful movie, if we find it, we can't tell them because they can't take it.
Right,
and that's
right.
The policy they've been operating under for the last half century. And every other space program, because, of course, the dire warning at the end of Brookings was, if you release this information that we're not alone, either in the form of, you know, little guys in ships are zipping around, i.e. the UFO thing, or, which you would think would be inherently much safer, ruins, you know, ancient archaeology found on the moon or Mars or wherever, you might think that would be safe. Oh, no, Margaret Mead warned. What if we find in their libraries information that would totally destroy every science that humanity thinks they know? They basically warned, Richard, in this document, that it could destroy human civilization if human beings were to receive certitude knowledge, scientific evidence that the human race has predecessors, companions, other stars out there with other civilizations, and some of them in the past or even now might be coming here or could have come here.
So this Brookings report, this is the smoking document. This is the smoking gun. This is ground zero for
the last 30 years.
Right.
What is interesting is you put these two documents together. You put the Brookings document, which basically is paranoid as hell. It reminds you of some of the McCarthy hearings. And then you put that together with the report from Iron Mountain, which says the only salvation of the human race is ultimately to go to space big time and to put human beings on other worlds and to bring resources back and stop defiling the nest and destroying civilization through either resource depletion or nuclear war because of resource depletion. You put these two things together and you've got what I think we're on the cusp of, which is the second age of space.
Which means we're
on the threshold, if I'm right, and that's what we're going to spend the next, hour and 15 minutes talking about, that we could see stunning changes in all of this controlling, you can't see it because you can't handle it, nonsense that's gone on for the last half century, and we're going to see a physical opening up of the solar system to where ordinary Americans, ordinary Brits, ordinary French guys, Italians, Zambezians can buy a ticket and go to Mars in the foreseeable future, not because of government space programs, which are up until recently playing their role of hiding everything, but the so-called private enterprise programs of people like Elon Musk and SpaceX and Jeff Bezos and Sir Richard Branson. There is such a stunning revolution being born right before our eyes. And we're going to spend the rest of the show talking about the specifics so everybody will know what to look for and how to follow the bouncing ball.
Is that what's happening? Is it that these private initiatives, you mentioned Elon Musk and others, they are forcing the hands of those that have been keeping the lid on disclosure for the last 60-plus years, that they now feel that they are compelled to do a controlled release, a controlled disclosure?
I've been wrestling with this for years now, and George and I have discussed this, excuse me for a minute, discussed this many times on the show. Why are we suddenly getting a Niagara Falls equivalent of real stunning data? I mean, if Lex gets the images I sent him earlier tonight posted, you're going to see some astonishing close-ups with screws and springs and baffles and plates and metal sheets and all this of artifacts on Mars taken by the Curiosity rover that not only we've never really seen, but they're now presenting them in a form, a non-JPEG form, so you can actually see the details. For years we wondered why these cameras that cost so many billions of dollars are crappier than the worst, smartphone in your phone you can get. It's because NASA's been tweaking the images to not reveal interesting stuff. Well, they've stopped doing a lot of that. And the Europeans have done the same thing. Amazing images coming out of their comet mission. And the Chinese, we'll get to the moon and the Chinese, I guess in the next hour or so. The point is, why are they all doing this? This afternoon, I had this lightning bolt, which was, oh my, It's because of people like Elon Musk. If you really have a relatively free society and you can't shoot down all the private spaceships that are going to be going out there in the next, 10 years or so, what do? If someday ordinary folks are going to be taking pictures of these things and sending, Twitter feeds that will go viral instantly because it's, look, Mom, my God, they were right. There's stuff here. So if you're preparing for that kind of future where you can't keep your fingers in the dike much longer, your PR backup plan, your political plan B, has got to be to put enough stuff in the archive that when the historians and people like me start pointing and saying, but you guys claimed all this stuff was not there, NASA can say quietly, just look under date so-and-so, Sol 739, whatever, and you'll see all kinds. If you were too damn dumb not to notice it, we can't help that. We published it just as we said, as the Curiosity Mars mission began, that we would.
On the one hand, deny, 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 but on the other hand, it's, well, here you go. Here's the information for those with eyes to see and ears to hear.
Well, I call it creeping disclosure because we live in a society, Richard, and this is really, really, really sad. Unless the president, unless Barack Obama sits behind the Oval Office desk, and maybe that's not a good example because who the hell would believe Obama anyway these days?
Indeed.
If some authority figure, now think of who would be, let's say the Pope. If Pope Francis were to make a global address with photographs and say, this is what's out there, everybody who's been in the know on this, including the Coast audience, would say, oh my God, NASA's been hiding all this stuff all these years. They'd rush to the archive and they're going to find all of these images of ancient, amazing technology that NASA's quietly been putting into its archives over the last couple, 3 years.
But didn't the Vatican's chief astronomer already do that? Didn't the Vatican's chief astronomer already sort of do that?
They've been hinting, they've been edging up on it. It started out with, we will baptize any aliens that want it if they just ask. Well, I was, until I reformed, a Roman Catholic. I happen to know that is directly 180 degrees away from Catholic doctrine and papal edicts and papal bulls. In order to be baptized, what are you being baptized for? To remove original sin, right?
Correct.
Okay. If you have an alien or an ET, do they have, if they don't have the human experience, if they're not human, do they have original sin? So you have to be a member of the human family to come to Earth as an ET and have original sin. So what the Pope is really saying subtly was the first aliens that are going to show up are going to be members of the family. You see how this is escalating, accelerating, kind of like the whole accelerating, universe, Big Bang thing?
Right, right. I mean, we're all related. If, in fact, this cataclysmic event happened on the Red Planet, we are sort of the surviving remnants of that.
Which is precisely what I looked into the camera on Fox about a decade ago and said, we are the Martians. And so a nuclear war on Mars, or however it came about, and if you want to, in the next hour we can get into some of those interesting differences that I have between what John is saying now and where our research has gone, because they have diverged. And while he's thinking conventional nuclear weapons, I'm thinking of things that, in fact, Richard, may have been used in a very blatant demonstration during 9/11 here on Earth. And they're not nuclear weapons at all. They're so far beyond nuclear weapons as nuclear weapons are beyond, Nobel's dynamite.
Are we talking directed energy weapons?
Exactly, except it isn't EM. It's the underlying field of space, the so-called torsion field, that if you manipulate it right, you can get matter to simply fall apart. Or as Dr. Judy Wood said, to dustify.
Yes.
The buildings floated down like a trillion little particles of concrete dust because that's what the weapon did to them. The planes were only a diversion to give the mainstream an excuse for what was really a demo for the in crowd that you can't touch us. Look what we can do. And they've been running scared for the last 15 years.
When you look at our solar system, Richard, and out you know, in other solar systems, we're discovering these super Earths that are many more times, you know, the mass of our planet here. I mean, do you see other evidence of a major, you know, cosmic war that happened in our own backyard?
Yeah. There's so many lines of it. In fact, that's why I've written, well, I'm writing two new books. One is ready, one is out. One was released by North Atlantic Books on Monday. Was it Monday? What day was the 24th? Wednesday?
That was Wednesday, yes.
Wednesday, yeah. Anyway, it was, the release date is the 24th. The book I happen to have, just happen to have a copy sitting right here. Isn't that amazing? Pluto, New Horizons for a Lost Horizon. That's Pluto, New Horizons for a Lost Horizon. Subtitle is Astronomy, Astrology, and Mythology. It's edited by Richard Grossinger. It's an anthology of a bunch of us folks who have been looking at Pluto, both in an historical context, in a mythological context, in an astrological, which is a psychological context, in a spiritual context, and of course, from our work, in a potential breakthrough on the whole ETs were out there and remodeling the solar system context, which I describe in exquisite detail with hundreds of references in about 15% of the book, which is available on North Atlantic's website tonight. You can also go to Amazon.com. It's called Pluto, New Horizons for a Lost Horizon.
All right, there you go. But what are some of the other sort of red flags that jump out at you that, you know, here in our own little backyard of the cosmos, there was a major nuclear conflagration or other types of, you know, advanced weaponry, you know, happening. I mean, we look out in the solar system or beyond our solar system. We are really an anomaly in terms of, you know, the mass of our planet compared
really
to other Earth-type planets.
This. You really have been following the story. I have to commend you. You have very accurate description of the details, and therein lies where the story has to go. The mainstream scientific community, and this is absolutely unprecedented. In fact, I lead off my Pluto chapter in the book with this. In the last 2 years, the mainstream scientific community, astronomers, physicists, chemists, the folks that get together at these conferences, that share papers, that share research when you need a geologist to look at the signatures of an exoplanet discovered by Hubble or, you know, the Keck telescopes or whatever, they have reached a consensus, and this is mind-boggling, and it has not made, you know, Brian Williams didn't claim to have found this. They have found that the solar system is well-nigh unique, one-of-a-kind, absolutely none can compare. It's one-of. And this is such scientific heresy, it's like we were thrown back to the pre-Galileo's days when the church thought that the Earth was the center of the entire cosmos. In the astronomical community, Richard, let me underline this, the solar system is now being looked at as so unique, so bizarrely singular, so not like the 2,000 plus other solar systems that we've now, or they've now cataloged, that they are beginning to talk openly and seriously that something different must have happened in the solar system. In the last week, which I thought was kind of amusing because I'm coming on to talk tonight about our model, in the last week, a mainstream paper has been promoted around the internet that the reason our solar system is so different from all these others is that Jupiter went on some kind of rampage, you know, orbitally. Its gravity destroyed all the inner planets that originally it formed, the so-called super-Earths, you know, 3 to 5 times Earth, and that the current crop of inner solar system planets is from the debris that managed to accrete in the wake of the solar system catastrophe billions of years ago, you know, 4.5 billion years ago at the dawn of the system, and what we got were Mercury, Venus, and Earth's moon, and Mars.
Is it Jupiter or Venus that rotates the wrong way?
Venus rotates backwards 243 days. And Uranus, the far outer planet, rotates on its side almost 90 degrees to its orbit, lying down, spinning around the sun.
Could that be evidence of some cosmic war?
Well, you're sensing where we might go, but the ending's going to be different than what you think. No, it's not a war. It's design. In all of the solar systems that we have found, human beings, intelligent life based on water, based on the carbon nitrogen cycle, all the stuff that we think, you know, DNA, all of that that makes up life as we know it here, can only exist if you have a solid planet with a surface exposed to a star that's going to live long enough to allow evolution to create life there and then not kill it a million years after it forms.
All right.
A long-lived solar system, and none of these other solar systems, because of the way their shape, their geometry,
I got to jump in here. I got that music coming up. Stay where you are. We'll come back and we'll discuss. Richard C. Hoagland here on the great program Coast to Coast AM. Richard Serrett sitting in for George Norrie. Stay with us.